Okay, okay. Wake up. Wake up. It doesn't exactly punch you in the stomach, does it? But come on. Let's hear it for the girls this morning as we begin another edition of the Mike Farwell Show. It was on this day in 1986, 38 years ago, this October the 25th, that for the first time in the history of the Billboard Hot 100, the top three spots were held by female solo acts. Cyndi Lauper's True Colors, which you just heard, was at number one. Tina Turner's Typical Male was at number two. And Janet Jackson's When I Think of You was number three. On this day in 1986, Girl Power at the top of the Billboard Hot 100. 6 minutes after nine on this Friday morning, the 25th of October. You know, the minute we begin the show every day, the phone lines are open to you. And usually this goes against my better judgment. I mean, if there's a call waiting, somebody's got something to say. It might even be criticism of me. But I love to live dangerously. So let's go right to the phones. Say good morning to Paul. Hello, Paul.
Paul, this is Mr. Anonymous.
Oh, it says Paul on my screen. Sorry, Anonymous.
How are you doing today?
I am doing so well. It's great to hear your voice. Where the hell are you?
Well, let's say it's still only 8 o'clock in the morning where I am. If you'd like the traffic report for the Trans-Canada Highway heading towards Thunder Bay, I can give that to you.
Stop in there and see my old buddy Vic Krasowski in Thunder Bay, okay? I think he's probably still at a radio station somewhere.
Now, hey, listen, when we first left this morning, I hit scan on the radio, and it was the only radio station I picked up was Denver.
Come on.
Well, you're on a straight line.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it.
And if you want the weather report, it's just below freezing here, and the sun is shining, and kind of reminds me of driving at this time of the day into Toronto because we're driving straight into the sun.
Straight into the sun, headed into Thunder Bay this crisp Friday morning where you are. It's really good to hear your voice. When are you going to be back in town?
Well, it's going to be a two-day drive. Maybe sometime late tomorrow.
How was the hunting?
Well, I played cat and moose with a moose. He won.
All right, Paul. You drive safe and get home safely, okay?
Okay. You have a great weekend.
Thanks. You as well. Great to hear from you. If you didn't see it on our Facebook page yesterday, Paul has been keeping at least me apprised of his well-being and whereabouts this past week. He's a regular voice on this show. He's been on a far northwestern hunting excursion, and he sent some pictures that I shared on our Facebook page yesterday, facebook.com/TheMikeFarwellShow. So if you haven't seen them yet, feel free to head there and check them out for yourself. All right, let's get to that Farwell Show 5 for this Friday morning. Number one, you can get your treats in the street tomorrow in Uptown Waterloo. The annual event is going to see a record number of businesses handing out candy this year, and a costume contest has been added to the festivities. It runs from 1 until 4 tomorrow afternoon in Uptown Waterloo, and you can get more information and a full list of events. It's very family friendly and fun. Just go to the website, uptownwaterloobia.com. Number two, an 18-year-old man is facing a charge of arson following a fire at a Kitchener playground. The blaze broke out overnight near the Grand River Recreation Complex at Ottawa Street and Heritage Drive on Tuesday when some playground equipment was set on fire. Damage is pegged at $65,000. Number three on your Farwell Show 5 this morning, the Department of National Defense is investigating a Kitchener park for possible unexploded artillery from the Second World War. Knollwood Park, which is behind Shepherd Public School and near the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium, has been included on a list of more than 100 locations across the country for increased scrutiny. Knollwood Park served as a training school for men and the Canadian Women's Army Corps during World War II. Number four, if Canadians could vote in the U.S. election, a majority would vote for Kamala Harris. That's the finding in a new survey ahead of next month's presidential election. 64% of respondents said they would back Harris, compared to just 21% who would vote for Donald Trump. And number five on your Farwell Show 5 this morning. And then there was one, just one Kmart store remains in the United States. After a location on Long Island closed this week, Kmart used to have more than 2,000 stores in the U.S.
I get my boxer shorts at Kmart in Cincinnati.
We're not going back to Cincinnati, Reese. We don't even start with that.
400 Oak Street.
We're not going back to Cincinnati. You don't have to go to Cincinnati and pick up boxer shorts.
Yeah, it's open Burnett in Cincinnati.
What did I say, Reese?
It's Kmart.
What
Cincinnati's a long way off. But you're getting further away from Kmart.
You don't have to go to Cincinnati to get a pair of underwear at Kmart.
You have to go to Kmart, 400 Oak Street.
But I tell you, Ray, we are not going to Cincinnati, and that's fine.
Get my boxer shorts at Kmart.
Raymond, he gets his boxer shorts at Kmart in Cincinnati, which no longer exists. The last Kmart store on the U.S. mainland is in a Miami shopping center. So if you want to go to Kmart and get your boxers or whatever else you get there, you got to go to Miami. And that is your Farwell Show 5 for this Friday morning. We'll take a break. When we come back, it was a video that went viral, more than a million views and counting, of a really unfortunate encounter for a young man in Waterloo who was subjected to a racist tirade. And I will quote, "There are too many Indians here. Do we need to be concerned and do something about rising hate on our streets?" That conversation coming up on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. It was a video shot on the streets of Waterloo, and it didn't take long for it to go viral, garnering more than a million views overall. Ashwin Annamalai was the subject of the racist tirade directed at him, and he took out his cell phone to record the exchange. The woman, who is very upset with Ashwin for no other reason than he was walking along the same street, it started with her flipping him the bird. It led to the confrontation and the video that was recorded, in which you could hear the woman saying, and I quote, "Indians are taking over Canada and go back to India." Municipal politicians across our region have condemned the rhetoric in the video, and Ashwin was at regional council earlier this week asking for greater effort to be put into combating hate on our streets. Barbara Perry is the director of the Center on Hate, Bias, and Extremism at Ontario Tech University, joins our show this morning. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
Does any of this surprise you at all?
Sadly, no.
Yeah.
I think that this is part of a broader national issue, but also part of a broader problem that we're seeing in the Tri-Cities area specifically.
I'll get to that in a moment, but when you talk to the specifics, because I don't disagree by any stretch, but when you talk about the broader national problem, I get that same sense too, Barbara, and I wonder if, you know, the anti-immigration rhetoric, if you will, that's playing out politically at the federal level, both here and in the United States, is contributing to things like this on our streets.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's something that we've been seeing for close to a decade now, is increasing political polarization and the willingness of political leaders to vilify communities. And so sort of laying the blame for, you know, the cost of living, for the lack of affordable housing, you know, all of those pieces, laying them at the feet of immigrants, easy scapegoats.
When you talk about the specifics of such incidents here in the Tri-City area, Kitchener, Waterloo, Cambridge, and our surrounding townships, is that based, Barbara, on the recent reporting from our regional police service that the number of hate crimes reported are increasing?
Yeah, that's definitely it. And also, I think conversations I've had with community-based organizations in the area. But yeah, the latest data from Stats Canada, which reflects police-reported hate crimes, does indicate that Waterloo has the highest rate across the country.
So what can we do to reverse this trend? What can be done, as Ashwin and others have asked our regional government to do, to combat hate on our streets?
It's a very challenging one because, as you say, it's sort of coming from the top down. So how do you counter that? And I understand that, you know, council there condemned the incidents, but I think we need to move beyond condemning now to countering that. And I think, you know, an important first step is, you know, looking to see, you know, whether anti-racism, anti-hate is embedded in the municipality's strategic plan. I think that's really important. It makes a very powerful statement. But I think also providing opportunities for communities to come together to sort of set the record straight, if you will, and highlight the positive stories, right? The contributions that the immigrants are making in the community as well. And I think another thing is there are a couple of organizations, international organizations, Strong Cities and the Coalition of Municipalities at UNESCO, that really bring communities together, municipalities together, to devise strategies for intervening at the local level. And I think it's really important for the cities in your area to, you know, be a part of those communities and learn from them and implement some of the sort of promising practices that we've seen elsewhere.
How important is it through your lens and the work that you do, Barbara, that this interaction was recorded? So it's not just one person's word that this happened to them. This is very much in our face. Hey, this is happening on our streets. How important is it that we have this kind of documentation?
I think that was such an important move and such a brave move for him as well, because it can bring backlash from others like the person who was on the tirade. So I think it's really important that we see this. It humanizes it. It makes people realize the impact that it can have on individuals and on communities. Because as he said, this is not a one-off. This is something that he experiences and his friends who are also racialized experience on a regular basis. So very important, I think, to highlight, you know, the very real nature of these kinds of attacks and the very real impacts as well.
And you talked a moment ago about the international organizations like UNESCO that can, you know, contribute to the betterment of our communities. And I think this is very important work today, given the growth in our country, reducing immigration targets or not. But if we're going to be the growing country and continued multicultural country in the decades ahead, we have to start solving these problems now.
We absolutely do. I mean, we have to, you know, remember that we have historically for the past almost 100 years, 50 years for sure, prided ourselves on our multiculturalism, prided ourselves on our willingness and ability to welcome folks from afar. And I think we also have to recognize how important they are to us, not just culturally, but economically as well. And we've seen that, I think, the reaction of business leaders, for example, to these restrictions and these cutbacks in immigration, that's going to have a real impact on the ability of businesses to find, you know, reliable employees.
Barbara, I really appreciate your time on our show this morning. Thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you for the conversation. I appreciate it.
Enjoy your day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Barbara Perry is the director of the Center on Hate, Bias, and Extremism at Ontario Tech University. It's nice to hear that she's grateful for the conversation, because these are the conversations we have to have, however uncomfortable from time to time. It's important that we address these things head on. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio. Minutes past 9 on your Friday morning, a few minutes away from that update in the 570 News Center. And then, oh, you mean we're getting another roundabout in Cambridge? Cool. I love roundabouts. That was dripping with sarcasm, by the way. I tried to make it drip as much as I could. It was almost spongy when I said, I love roundabouts. This particular roundabout in front of a high school, because what could possibly go wrong? Is causing some concern. We'll talk about that after the 9:30 update. Right now, let's get back to the phones. We love to hear from you on the program. Mike is with us. Good morning, Mike.
Hi, Mike. Mike from the rainy beach this morning.
Oh, the rainy beach. I'm sorry to hear it.
I'd like to condemn that racist incident that just happened there. I've been a corporate project manager and worked all over the world, have many friends in India, Brazil, United States, Asia, all over the world. Now, I have seen it happen to some colleagues of mine when they've come here to visit and stuff like that, where some racist remarks have been directed towards them, and I find it absolutely abhorrent. Now, when these things have happened, I've seen people, politicians like Trump, send dog whistles about immigrants and stuff like that. However, I've always asked myself, when I've witnessed this or heard this, why is this being done? Why are people reacting like this? Is it because they have no opportunities here in Canada? Is it because they feel they've been left behind and the government is not going to invest in them? And I think part of the equation, Mike, here is asking, why are they feeling this way? What makes them lash out like that? And I think we have to ask that question as well.
Mike, I appreciate the call and the thoughts, and I'm certainly glad you started with the condemnation, because it has to start there. And sure, there is perhaps opportunity to explore the whys, but racism is also racism, isn't it? And if one is a racist, yeah, I guess there might be reason for some exploration there. Let's get you to the 570 News Center for that update, and then the new roundabout in Cambridge causing some concern. We'll tell you why. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News. Regional Council on Wednesday approved the design for a new roundabout in Cambridge. It's been the subject of much discussion. It will include a pedestrian underpass. It's going to be on Franklin Boulevard between Bishop Street and Avenue Road. Oh, what's that you say? That's like practically in front of St. Benedict's Catholic Secondary School. Gosh darn it, you're right about that. You're right about that. And this has been a long discussed roundabout because there were myriad concerns raised about it. We're joined on the show to talk more about it by Nicholas Ermeta, who is the Ward 8 councillor in the city of Cambridge. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, this is a regional initiative. Why the municipal councillor from the lower tier? Well, tell me the resident of the city that ever calls their regional councillor. Did you call Pam Wolf or Doug Craig about this? Possibly, but it's more likely that you would have spoken to Nicholas or somebody maybe even at the school board. So Nicholas joins our show. Good morning, Nicholas.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for having me on the show. I just want to say that I'm here as an individual councillor. I'm not representing the mayor and council, but it's great to be on the show. And you're right, I'm getting the calls.
Well, I had a feeling that would be the case, because who do we call except the ward councillor in our neighborhood? I'm not sure everybody fully understands the whole regional thing. But that aside, what are you what have you been hearing when these calls are coming in, Nicholas?
Well, it's interesting that the region claims there is general support, because this is not what I'm hearing at all. It doesn't match what I have seen or heard. There is strong opposition, and I mean very strong opposition. Parents are very angry. These are parents who live in the area. They tell me that they pay a lot in taxes, and they don't feel heard by the region, and they don't feel this decision represents them. So I'm bringing their concerns forward. And I just wanted to say, too, that one of our Catholic trustees, Marissa Phillips, was also at the public meeting that we had back in April, and she was absolutely correct. The public meeting in April was overflowing with parents and citizens who were extremely concerned about the safety of the children, and she was also correct that the presentation was more focused on traffic flow and that there wasn't enough mentioned on student safety, and these are the concerns that I have as well.
So you refer to that public meeting, Nicholas, and the overwhelming number of parents that were there raising concern, and yet here we fast forward to this week and the roundabout is approved. So is that what you're alluding to when you say that parents haven't felt heard in this situation?
Well, certainly that's what the parents are telling me. They're saying we went to the meeting, we expressed our concerns, and they don't feel this decision reflects it.
What,
and I stand with them.
What are the concerns that have been raised about this particular roundabout?
So a lot of it has to do with the safety of the students crossing. And so, for example, with a tunnel, people don't feel safe in a tunnel. They're concerned about potential criminal activity, and that is a valid concern because when I was in Ottawa at a pedestrian tunnel, very similar to what the region is proposing, I saw criminal acts right in broad daylight, and I was flabbergasted. So it is a legitimate concern. I hope I'm wrong about this location, but it is a concern, and I'm hearing that from the parents. And even things like not having enough lighting, you know, that comes up as well in the tunnel. And then just with the volume of traffic in that area, the volume of traffic has grown exponentially, and it continues to grow. So, you know, mixing that amount of traffic with the roundabout, that's creating a lot of concerns as well.
So would you rather that the intersection remain a signalized intersection?
That would be my preference, and there are a lot of signalized intersections across the United States that are better than the conventional ones here. So there are a lot of models that we can look at to make improvements from the pedestrian point of view. So that would be my preference, yes.
What would those improved signalized intersections look like?
Usually they allow for wider islands so that people don't have to cross the entire road at once. And, you know, they have safety barriers up. They also, the lanes are designed in such a way where the traffic can flow down, like cannot slow down.
So as a ward councillor at the municipal level, Nicholas, hearing these concerns from constituents, but essentially being powerless because this is a regional issue, how do you stick handle this politically?
Well, my job is to represent the residents, so I communicate with the region regularly on this, and, you know, I continue to talk to all members of regional council, so I'll just keep bringing the concerns forward and present alternatives. They haven't heard the last from me yet, and I'll be coming forward with some things in the future.
What might those things look like that you're coming forward with?
Going to be a surprise, Mike. I know you're excited about it as I am, but I've been looking at a lot of things and I will be reporting back in the future.
All right. I get excited about everything that's got to do with a roundabout, Nicholas. You know that.
yeah.
Do the students have any other options for crossing besides at this roundabout and the pedestrian tunnel that's being created?
Well, I mean, there is Canamara, but the way I look at it is I'm looking at where the pedestrian flow is. So the pedestrian flow is across that intersection, so I don't see another alternative. You know, they go to the plazas and all that, right? So I don't see any alternatives. I think the region really needs to get this right, and I don't think the decision is the best one right now. I think that we need to go back, and we have to come up with something much safer.
But because it was just approved this Wednesday, can it be undone?
Well, they haven't bought the land from the school board yet, so there's things like that have to be worked out. So the way I look at it is the decision has many steps, and things can change. And I would hope that if people continue to speak up, that eventually they will be heard.
Nicholas, I appreciate your time on the show this morning. Thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome, Mike. I would also just like to add that my constituents come first. I have their back, and I won't stop speaking up for them. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Nicholas Ermeta, Ward 8 councillor in Cambridge. These are the kinds of stories that frustrate me a little bit because I don't believe that we all fully grasp the whole regional, municipal, two-tier system here. And so even though this is a regional project, it will be the ward councillor municipally that gets the pushback, hears the complaints. Maybe the school board trustees would hear that, but rarely does it get to the regional councillors. Maybe this is a way to get it to the regional councillors, but I'll just put it to you this way. And you'll remember the roundabout on Homer Watson at Blockline, right near St. Mary's High School, where a student was struck by a bus. Lots of people say she died in that collision. That's not the case, but she was injured. And it wasn't long after the roundabout opened. And I would like to think we've learned a thing or two since then. Maybe the pedestrian tunnel is what we have learned. So you're not mixing as many people with the traffic in the roundabout. But you heard Nicholas express concerns about the tunnel as well. What do you think about the idea of a new roundabout at the intersection of Franklin Boulevard between Bishop and Avenue Road, right essentially next to St. Benedict's Catholic Secondary School in Cambridge? Is this a good place for a roundabout? Is a pedestrian tunnel a good idea? If you don't think the regional government is listening, we certainly are. If you've got an opinion or a thought you'd like to share, this is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio.
It's interesting that the region claims there is general support, because this is not what I'm hearing at all. It doesn't match what I have seen or heard. There is strong opposition, and I mean very strong opposition. Parents are very angry. These are parents who live in the area. They tell me that they pay a lot in taxes, and they don't feel heard by the region.
Nicholas Ermeta, Ward 8 councillor in Cambridge, joining us to talk about the roundabout just approved for Franklin Boulevard in Cambridge. Nicholas, of course, is the city councillor. It's a regional project, but the city councillor is usually the one who ends up on the receiving end of the complaints and concerns. He's trying to give those concerns voice, and he even alluded to some surprises he's got coming down the road on this one. We will continue to watch with interest, but for now, the project moves forward. A new roundabout, because we love our roundabouts around here, out front St. Benedict Catholic Secondary School in Cambridge. Let's go to the phones and hear from you on this. Frank, good morning.
Hey, what about those Maple Leafs? Jeez.
Frank, let's talk roundabouts. Yeah. I got busy phone lines this morning. Okay, I love you. Don't talk about the Leafs.
Sorry, buddy.
Okay.
My bad.
That's okay.
I got to talk to somebody about it. But anyway.
Your therapist. So that's what I do.
Okay, I will.
Okay.
The bridge, the tunnel, that's... What about going up in the air and putting a pedestrian bridge on two sides of the roundabouts there? Pedestrian bridge.
You know what, Frank? Pedestrian bridge as opposed to pedestrian tunnel. Then you are not subterranean. Not a bad idea. Bob, good morning.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. I think this is totally ridiculous, what the city or what the regional government's doing. You have St. Benedict's High School there. You have two grade schools. You have two strip malls. And I can't understand why this is so important to put a roundabout when, you know, going down Franklin Boulevard, basically they're all roundabouts. So what's with one stop sign? And I was thinking the same thing about it. An overhead walkway instead of a tunnel.
Yeah, you know what, Bob? It hadn't occurred to me, I'm embarrassed to say, but I think both you and Frank are onto something with that idea. Why not? I mean, with the expense of a tunnel, why not just put a bridge instead? It can't be much more expensive, if more expensive at all. And on the point of the roundabout and whether it's stop sign or signalized, they are proven to be safer insofar as the collisions that occur within them are less severe. But there are also more collisions in roundabouts because we just, after all these decades, still haven't mastered them. Sean, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, this is unfortunately a result of bad planning and conflicting aims over years. Franklin Boulevard was originally designed to be a high-speed corridor from the top to the bottom of Cambridge years and years ago. And it was an unfortunate place to put a high school. So now we have the end result of said planning. We need to get students from, you know, one side to the other side. And as we've seen in other locations, such as the traffic signals, you know, like on Weber Street that were put in, and we've seen at the other high school, teenagers are notoriously bad at following rules. So whether, you know, so it is what it is. But, yeah, a tunnel's a bad idea. You know, that's a lot of violence happens in tunnels because kids are kids. But, you know, I agree. A bridge would be a better idea, or maybe even better. You sink Franklin Boulevard underground like Highway 8 is, and join Saginaw and Elgin as a bridge, and there's no exit there. Simple as that.
All right, Sean, another suggestion for the engineers that are putting this whole thing together. Norma, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I ditto your previous callers. A tunnel is a bad idea because of the violence and whatnot, and I think a pedestrian bridge, if they're determined to put in this roundabout, a bridge would be far superior. You're not going to have the violence and the problems that you're going to have with a tunnel. I don't see why the way the intersection is currently, why that's a problem. But if they're determined to put in a roundabout, then it needs to be a pedestrian bridge, not a tunnel.
All right, Norma. It seems to be consensus on the bridge idea here as opposed to tunnel. Jerry, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. I actually got a day off, so I can call you for a change.
I love to hear your voice.
Yeah, I mean, the two callers ago, he's right. Franklin was supposed to be kind of like a diversion road around town, and you can see what's happened there. But, I mean, they built the bridge between the two campuses at Conestoga College across the 401. Why can't they build one there? And I know if I was struggling with housing and inclement weather, I know where I'd be moving into. A nice, cozy tunnel underground out of the rain and weather. Why wouldn't I go there?
Interesting observation, Jerry. And, you know, we talk so much, and we did on the show yesterday. I even received an email after the show thanking me for the important conversations around homelessness and the lack of housing, etc. Considering the magnitude of the problem today, why wouldn't that become a safe haven? Certainly provides better shelter than, say, the nylon of a tent, as an example. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. It's a Friday, and you know what that means here on the program, right? The Friday Four Roundtable, the Coaches Show with head coach UC Ahokas from the Kitchener Rangers, Free Phones Friday, and your requests. It's an all-request Friday here on the program. You can email Mike at 570news.com, or when you call in, just let Wobbles, a.k.a. Colin Robertson, the guy on the other side of the glass, know what song you would like to hear. We'll play a little bit of it for you during this All Request Friday. And that one is for Russell, Little Easy Livin' from Uriah Heep. And isn't it interesting? I'm glad Russell is listening, because he also sends an email about our roundabout discussion just a moment ago. The email to Mike at 570news.com. This gets more expensive with every suggestion. How about no roundabout at all? Listen, you got my vote on that. I cannot stand the ding-dang things, but I think that ship has sailed. And Clinton's email to Mike at 570news.com is, my idea is to dig down for the roundabout, allowing pedestrians to stay at ground level. This would eliminate any interference between traffic and pedestrians. Get it? That sounds really expensive, though, but I really think, like, it is high time when we design our new roundabouts that we move pedestrians out of the traffic circles. I think we have failed in that regard to date, and there's no better time than now to create safer pedestrian crossings away from the roundabouts themselves, because the way we've designed them so far, I think, is a recipe for disaster. All right, we're coming up on 10 o'clock and your update from the 570 News Center, and then something else that we do every Friday morning is a segment that you asked for. You said, I want to hear more about the various areas of our community. and get some more information, do a deeper dive. So we do that every Friday morning at 10 o'clock with a segment we call Council Chambers. And joining us this morning is the mayor of Wellesley Township, Joe Nowak, right after this update from the 570 News Center. You're listening to the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio. Friday mornings, 10 o'clock, we do a segment we call Council Chambers that allows us to do a deeper dive into the goings-on in one of the neighborhoods around our region. And this morning, we go into Wellesley Township. We are joined by Mayor Joe Nowak to talk about all things Wellesley. Mayor Nowak, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you this morning?
I'm doing very well, thank you, sir. And you?
I'm doing well.
Glad to hear it. I think I should start, I feel it's necessary, with a belated, I know it's been about a week now, but a very happy belated birthday, sir.
we made another one. That's the good thing.
Another trip around the sun is never a bad thing. Absolutely not.
That's right.
Let's get into some of the housing issues. I mean, this is an issue in every community, Wellesley Township, notwithstanding. And just recently, there's been a proposal for more than 150 homes on Gerber Road. I know the community is not thrilled. There's been some concerns raised. How do you feel about this particular development on Gerber Road?
Well, it's, so the developer originally approached the township, I think, in 2022 with a bunch of different ideas and some concepts. And they came back. So at that point, they had a draft plan of subdivision, which we weren't too keen about. What we wanted to see was more middle housing, apartments, and for the less expensive units. They came back to us a couple weeks ago, I guess it was, with a new plan. The plan does have almost a full block of townhouses and apartments, so it's they've addressed the concerns of council, and I think I'm quite pleased with that. I think we need, we get a lot of we don't have a place in Wellesley Village where you can go and have a beverage. In order to support some of them, we need a sort of an increased critical mass of individuals living here to support small businesses. So from that perspective, I think it's a good idea to see this happening. The 150 homes you're talking about, I think, is a little bit light. There's actually two developments that are going to be coming forward. There's another one for 50 units, I believe, for condo units. We haven't seen the draft on that, but we probably will see that sometime in the spring. And I would imagine both of these developments, they'll start putting the services in the spring or through the summer next year. So looking forward to it.
Do you have room for growth, Mayor Nowak? Is this important that the township grow?
Well, we have the room for it. The region does take care of our water and our sewage plant, and we've been assured by the region that there's no issues with regard to supply of water and capacity at our plant. So I think growth is important. I mean, we need that critical mass to diversify, to have different types of commercial outlets and possibly some restaurants and a pub sort of thing. Yeah, I think it's important to move forward.
When you open that pub, let's you and me sit down and have one of these conversations over a beverage.
Hey, that's a great idea. the only place in all of Wellesley Township, there's only one place in all of Wellesley Township where you can actually sit down and have that type of beverage, the one that you're talking about.
there's never, it's never a bad idea for more, in my opinion. You guys have some options out there. I don't want you to drink too much, but you can enjoy a beverage for sure. On the housing front, if we stick with that and the room that you say you have for growth, the region managing water and assuring you that there is sufficient supply for that. But what about the Housing Accelerator Fund federally, Mayor Nowak? Does Wellesley Township qualify for any of that funding?
Well, we're not sure yet. We've applied for $1.1 million in funding, if I recall. The total number of housing units that are projected to be built in the next years without support of the fund, approximately 83 units. The funding we are hoping to support support the building of an additional 37 units, primarily in the form of, like I mentioned earlier, affordable type units. Whether it's triplexes or fourplexes, we don't have those types of developments in the community at this point, and that's the misstep. I think we want to support. It would be. Oh, I mean, there's young families that can't upfront a large deposit on a new home. So, and you need that youth in the community. There's no question about that. You need places for the seniors that may want to, sell their homes and downsize. So, yes, definitely it would be important for our community.
When last we talked, I recall the conversation around a proposed development for Queens Bush Road, and there was some back and forth between council and the developer on that one. And ultimately, as it turns out now, Mayor Nowak, you've avoided a hearing at the Ontario Land Tribunal. What changed? What were you able to accomplish with that development on Queensbush?
Okay, so they originally approached the township or our staff looking to put a 15-unit building there. The developer eventually, after discussing this with our staff, there was issues with sight lines, there was issues with the need for minor variances and these sort of things. The developer eventually applied for a zoning change to allow for 12 stacked townhouses. There was a significant amount of pushback because of the location. It's right across from the school. Over a period of time, council had a look at it. Council decided to pass a bylaw that would actually allow for, I think, 8 units only. Well, that wasn't suitable to the developer, they were going to take it to the OLT. That did give us some time, give our staff some time to have some discussions with the developer, and they did. And over a period of time, they came up with a bit of a compromise. Now we're looking at 10 units, and council agreed to that. You know, when you go to the OLT, the chances, especially in this day and age, and the need for housing, especially this type of housing, the chances of success at the OLP would be minimal, I would think. So I think I believe the township has really been better served and received more favorable outcome than if we had a full hearing had proceeded. So, I think that's been good for the township.
Mayor Joe Nowak is with us on Council Chambers this morning. He is the mayor of Wellesley Township, and like every other part of this region, housing is a primary concern. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, something else that is always a consideration in our townships is road safety and the speeds with which drivers drive on those rural roads. We'll continue our conversation with Wellesley Township Mayor Joe Nowak on the Mike Farwell Show this morning. This is 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Every Friday morning at 10, we have the opportunity to do a deeper dive into one of the areas of our region. Today, we're focusing on Wellesley Township. Mayor Joe Nowak is with us on Council Chambers. We've talked a lot about housing, as much an issue in Wellesley Township as it is anywhere in the region. Mayor Nowak, I also know that road safety is an ongoing concern in our rural communities. And a report this summer recommended lowering speed limits across the township. Is there any plan to implement those recommendations?
Yeah, so I think the staff are reviewing the recommendation by council now. It included to lower all the residential streets from 50 to 40. That's in the settlement areas. Lower speeds on the gravel roads from 80 to 70. And I think it'd be really important, lowering rural school roads, school zones on 70 and 80 kilometer country roads down to 50. I think the major concern that we've had is the speed of the vehicles that are entering and exiting the villages throughout the community. They don't seem to slow down. We've tried a number of things. We work with the WSRP, the police. They set up some radar, and that's good for for a week or two. But then they go right back to to speeding. We are bringing in the cameras. I think you've probably read a fair bit about that lately. We have three schools where cameras will be installed. And we're also considering a school safety zone in Linwood. That particular school doesn't front right on a regional road, so that's a little bit different requirement there. But hopefully that will, slow people down. It is a serious, there's accidents in the rural areas are far more serious, I think, in general terms than they would be in the city because the speeds are so high.
No question about it. And recently, residents have been speaking up and raising concern about the intersection of Hessenstrasse and Maplewood and Hergott Road. Yes. Is there any opportunity for improvement at that intersection, Mayor Nowak?
Well, we're looking at it. Whenever we get an issue, come forward by the residents, our staff will review the intersection. There are certain standards that we have to follow as far as warrants are concerned. I know they have looked at that. They've improved the sight lines in the past. I think the residents are looking for a four-way stop there. Well, you have to be a little bit careful. Sometimes a four-way stop can actually be a little bit more dangerous than going right through. So we are looking at it. There will be a report coming back to council probably before the year's out. I think there's whatever is planned. I think there's some talk about an overhead flashing light that covers the intersection. That might be one option. Rumble strips wouldn't work there. It's too busy of an intersection. But it'll come back to council at budget time to see what staff are recommending.
What makes you say a four-way stop could be more dangerous than the absence of the stop signs?
Well, I don't have any statistics on that in front of me, but I if you're coming down a road at 80, 90, well, and you're speeding, we talked about speeding, you're coming down that road at 100 kilometers an hour, and then all of a sudden there's a stop sign, and if it's new, especially when it's new, it's something that people have to get used to. There's a danger of a rear end collision there, and I think I've talked to regional staff about that on regional roads on a number of occasions, and they've confirmed that you've got to be very careful with the four way stop. They're really not meant to slow traffic down, not necessarily. So.
Before I let you go this morning, Mayor Nowak, what about the old Wellesley Arena? What's the plan for that site?
Well, there are currently no set or approved plans for the property. Council did pass a resolution a few years ago stating that the park and open space area, so all the green area, is to remain as such. So that's ball diamonds and soccer fields. We have begun a public consultation process to determine the best use for these lands. This process started early this year with an online survey that allowed citizens to bring forward their input and ideas. There was 419 responses, and of that, 202 thought, mixed uses would be most appropriate for the land. Mixed use is a concept in development planning that blends in multiple uses. Residential, commercial, cultural institution. I myself, I
I would like to see a more modern library there if it could be implemented somehow. There'll be considerable more consultation happening over this year. I don't think there's any decisions made until probably the end of 2025, but we will be going out to the people for more consultation throughout the year.
Mayor Nowak, appreciate your time on the show this morning. Thank you very much for being here, and enjoy the weekend ahead.
Thanks for having me.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Joe Nowak is the mayor of Wellesley Township. He joins us on Council Chambers this Friday morning, something we do every Friday morning at 10 here on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. A true story. The whole baby, you ain't seen nothing yet, was actually an intentional mocking of someone's stutter. And it just fit the lyrics so well and worked out so well that BTO kept the lyric in the song just like that. Baby, even though they were mocking someone's stutter when they wrote the song. I don't make these stories up. I didn't mock the stutter, but the song became a hit. And there are a couple of things you can be sure of on our All Request Fridays here on the show. If it's Alice Cooper, it likely came from Mark. And if it's Canadian content, a.k.a. CanCon, it likely came from Paul. Paul wanted the Burton Cummings version of Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, doubling down on the CanCon today. But listen, we're having enough trouble with the computers as it is, Paul, so you're going to get the BTO version. But thank you for requesting some Canadian rock and roll on this All Request Friday here on the program. Fridays are hockey days in Kitchener. We're going to be at the Memorial Auditorium tonight for the Rangers and Erie Otters. And as we do every Friday morning at 10:30, we'll check in over at the Memorial Auditorium with Rangers head coach UC Ahokas. And then that other coach, Paul Fixter, who's part of our broadcast team here on 570 News Radio, will join me as we get you set for a weekend of Rangers hockey at home tonight versus Erie and then on the road in Erie tomorrow. And I've got just one question for you ahead of the coaches' show and the other coaches' show. What do you mean we're not in the top 10 CHL rankings? What do you mean that the Kitchener Rangers are not in the top 10? I'll tell you right now, I got some words for you. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. It is Friday morning, part of hockey day in the city of Kitchener. Friday nights at the Memorial Auditorium are the stuff of tradition in this town. And every Friday morning at this time, we have a conversation with the head coach of the Kitchener Rangers. UC Ahokas joins us for the coach's show. Good morning, UC.
Good morning.
You've been playing an awful lot of hockey over the last 3 weeks, three games in each of those weeks. How do you manage the workload this week for the team after your three-game weekend last weekend?
Well, the boys had a day off, and then we've had good three practice days, so they're young. They can work, and they recover fast. So the boys, this day's boys, they get a free day off, and they're full of energy again. So it's been good.
When things have been going so well for you on the ice during games, what do you do for practices to get ready for another weekend? Are you just kind of going over the same things to reinforce those habits? Do you try different things?
No, we haven't said what we want to. It's a process. We want to keep building our game. It's not even nearly where we want it to be. And if you want to be good in the end of the year, your game has to develop. So that's pretty much the thing. You work the whole time in our defensive game, our breakouts, just to get it better and better, and not really think about the results, what we've had, and just keep building our game.
Speaking of building that game and not thinking about the results, UC, you know you were supposed to be in the top 10 this week, right? You know that.
No. It's all right. It's all good. We just play, and let's see. After the season, all of those top 10s and rankings, they don't matter. So it's all good, and we keep doing. Only thing what matters is we build and we keep doing well, and just the build team develops, and then we'll see after the season where we are. Of course, we want to be as high as possible in the not rankings, but in the real that you get into playoffs in a good spot. But that's how I think of regular season. You have to build your game and keep working. Just keep working. That means playoffs, you're ready.
All right. Well, I'm going to get upset about it for you, okay? I think you should be in the top 10.
Okay.
Okay, I'll do that part. You coach the team. I'll yell at the rankings.
Yeah.
How do you go into a weekend, and how do you deal with the absence of Matthias Stark?
We have 11 forwards, but we have 7 D also, so we can do that well. And too bad he's out. We have now 11, and it's good. And if something happens, we can still bring up Winston Cameron, so it's not a bad thing. And now we have 7 D to play, so yeah, it's just some guys will have a little bit more ice time. It's nothing different.
One of those 7D is Cameron Reed, who got some recognition this week. He's going to be at that prospects game, and he's also been recognized by Central Scouting as a pretty highly ranked prospect. What have you seen from this young man in his second year on your blue line?
Well, I think he's been playing better and better when the season's been going on. Like, of course, his skating is such a good asset, and now he's playing with more confidence, and he can make plays, and yeah, he's going definitely in the right direction. But same like the NHL rankings or the prospect rankings or draft rankings, they don't really matter, or it's in the end of the year, if you play well in playoffs and you've been doing good, and it only needs one team, and usually the rankings from NHL teams are way different what Central Scouting does. So it's more, I think he's in a good pass and growing as a player.
You get to see the Erie Otters twice this weekend. You saw them on the first night of the regular season when your team wasn't 100% physically. Is this a chance for you this weekend to, you know, show the league and maybe show the Erie Otters the real Kitchener Rangers?
Oh yeah, it's Erie is a good, really good team. They have a lot of good talent, so it's a good challenge for us. It's more like a mini playoffs. It's actually good to play them back to back, so you can think of it as a mini playoff series and kind of be ready right away and right now for the start. And I know we have to, against them, you always have to compete and you have to be smart with the puck. Like, those are the big things. If we do that well, and we're good low, an offensive zone low, and we can attack, we can score goals. But they have really some good high-end talent, so you have to be really aware what do you do with the puck.
Always look forward to Friday night at the Odd. We'll see you at the rink, UC. Thank you for this.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
UC Ahokas, the head coach of the Kitchener Rangers. Listen, I knew I wasn't going to get him to bite on all that nonsense about the top 10. Frankly, I think the top 10 is just a marketing exercise on the part of the league. But still, like, come on with your coming on that the Kitchener Rangers beat one of the teams that was ranked in the top 10 last week. and that team stays in the top 10, and the Kitchener Rangers don't even get into the top 10. Not even an honorable mention. This team has gone 9 games without a regulation loss. That's okay. They're just fine with that. I'm not fine with that. I'll tell you right now what I'm not fine with, and it's those rankings. But that's okay. It's not the job, the coach's job to bite on this. It's my job to get all frustrated about it and let you know how frustrated I am about it. We're going to have some fun this weekend, aren't we? Kitchener Rangers taking on the Erie Otters tonight at the Memorial Auditorium. Our pregame show brought to you by Harris Law will get underway at 6:30. And Paul Fixter and I will have it chock full of information and analysis for you before the puck drops. Then we've got Rangers Otters. And after that, you know what's after that. Rangers talk, just like we do after every Rangers home game. Paul and I will stay late into the night. It'll be you and me and Fixie and the cleaning staff at the Memorial Auditorium. And Josh Brown's usually hanging around too, finishing off his column. Everybody else is gone, and we'll talk about Rangers hockey late into the night on Rangers Talk, brought to you by USafe Flooring. So that's your entire evening of hockey coverage starting at 6:30 right here on 570 News Radio. We'll take a break when we come back. It's the Other Coaches Show, a.k.a. Paul Fixter, our color analyst on Kitchener Rangers broadcasts, joins me. I wonder how he feels about the top 10 snub. We'll talk about that and more coming up on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. I am a firm believer that you have to have been to Bob Cajun to fully appreciate this song by The Tragically Hip. But Wobbles, a.k.a. Colin Robertson, our guy on the other side of the glass, asked me just as we were starting the coaches show with UC Ahokas if Paul Fixter would like any special music to begin his segment, The Other Coaches Show, every Friday morning at this time. So I texted Fixie. He got back to me right away and without hesitation said, Bob Cajun. Why Bob Cajun, Fixie?
Oh, it's such a great song, Mike. I almost tear up every time I hear it. I loved Gord. I loved The Tragically Hip. And we're talking hockey. There was no bigger hockey fan than Gord Downie, who, till his dying day, wore his Bob Uhr Boston Bruins wristwatch. Not a Rolex, not a... He wore a Boston Bruins Bob Uhr watch. Loved Gord, loved hockey, and I love Bob Cajun.
You and I have recently seen the new display, for lack of a better word, they have outside Slush Puppy Place, it's called now, in Kingston on Tragically Hip Way. And you can stand in the place of the eye in the song that says, the sign that says the hip. So we'll make sure we do that when we get to Kingston in February.
Absolutely, we will.
Yeah, for sure. Let's start, Fixie, with the top 10 rankings. You and I alluded to this on our post-game show, I think it was Sunday, after the Rangers extended their point streak to 9 games and thought, well, surely to goodness, they'll be in the top 10 this week. And lo and behold, we ain't.
Mike, I know this isn't rant or rave hour, but this is my rant. It's my big time rant. I can't believe it. Same amount of points. Niagara's played one less game than us, but same amount of points, 16 points. We win 3 out of 3, including that win over Niagara. They went on to win 2 more games that weekend, but they lost to us. They only dropped 1 spot, and we don't get any recognition. It's mind-boggling to me. The other thing, when I looked at it a little bit further, the OHL has 4 teams, the Western Hockey League has 4 teams, and the Quebec League has 2 teams. So in order for us to get in there, somebody would have had to come out, because they're not going to have 5 teams from one league. That team to come out should have been Niagara.
You're not going to get a disagreement from me, but I was also not surprised that UC Ahokas wasn't taking any of the bait that I threw into the water a moment ago when I had him on the show. He doesn't care about the rankings. All he cares about is where the team is at when the regular season comes to an end.
Yeah, I'm at home today, so I was able to listen to Coach Ahokas' comments. And it's interesting. The one thing that really stuck out with me is he gave the boys a day off, and then they had 3 days of practice. And he kept emphasizing building the game. They want to keep building the game. And again, he used the word that he uses all the time, work hard. And those are words that we hear from him all the time. And you and I have talked about how hard work equals results in all facets of life, Mike, and especially with his hockey club. The other interesting one, back-to-back games are always intriguing to me. We had it last weekend, but he referred to it as a mini playoff. That's kind of a cool way of looking at it, I suppose.
I think so, too, and I thoroughly enjoy it because it's difficult to win both ends of those back-to-back games, even though the Kitchener Rangers did that last weekend over Guelph, another reason I think they should have been acknowledged in the top 10. But going back to what you just said about what we heard from head coach Jussi Ahokas, I wondered if this would resonate with you, Fixie, because he flat out said the Rangers game right now is nowhere near where they want it to be. It's all about continuing to develop that game. There's a process. What they've done so far is, you know, just part of that foundation, those building blocks. I've got to think that sounds somewhat familiar to you from your time with the two-time Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche. A great team full of great players, big stars, but you can't go reading your own press clippings and thinking you get to win on paper.
Mike, we used to have... No, you can't. And we used to have a saying, and I carried this through my entire days coaching in any league. The plan is progress, not perfection. We wanted to progress each day. We wanted to get better each day. Perfection, nobody's perfect. So we just kept emphasizing progression. He used the word building. I think you can substitute building for progress. And we just kept them. The plan is progress, not perfection. And, you know, in the end, when you win, I guess you've perfected better than anybody else, ultimately. But you can't get caught up reading your press clippings. I talked with Ben Boudreau last weekend about that. And he said, oh, yeah, it's gone to our players' heads that we're in the top 10. They didn't expect us to be in the top 10 in the league. There's 20 teams, and here we are, top 10 in the country. And so Ben has acknowledged that it was affecting the players on his team. I don't think you can read too much into it at this point in the season, but recognition is nice. Like, there's a reason they have these lists. I know there's an advertiser put behind it, Mike, but there is a reason. It's acknowledging the building or the progress that these teams have made, and Rangers are clipping along at a really nice pace, having won 4 games in a row and points in 9 straight games. That's impressive.
It certainly is. And in light of that and the progress that is possible with what lies in front of the Rangers this weekend, a back-to-back with the Erie Otters, you'll remember, Fixie, as well as I and all Rangers fans, that first night at the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium, the Rangers fell behind 3-0. They got as close as 3-2, but ultimately Erie wins at 5-2. We all know, it's been well documented, the team wasn't at its best physically, not using it as an excuse. But how much motivation do you think that adds to the Rangers this weekend as they're going to say, hey, we can skate with this Erie Otters club here in the West?
Well, yes, we can. They were missing Schaefer, I believe, as well, Mike.
They were.
That weekend. So I'm really looking at, you know, Kitchener wants to keep Erie below them. Erie's below them right now in the standings, and that has to be part of their plan, I would think, is to keep those teams below them. I'm really looking forward to, you know, you mentioned to Coach about Cameron Reed being in the prospects game. So is Matt Schaefer. Shows Malcolm Spence for the Erie Otters. And then Luca Romano and Tanner Lamb getting NHL recognition. These are some really young prospects on both teams. That's kind of the game within the game. It'll be fun to watch these guys go head-to-head. Both teams are very good teams, well-coached, we know that. I mean, Stan's record stands on its own, and we know the work that our coaching staff puts in. So I think there is motivation to beat Erie, Mike, because we lost the first game, no question.
You mentioned Stan Butler, the head coach of the Erie Otters. Maybe you should get to the rink now, Fixie, and start your pregame with Stan so he's done talking by 7 o'clock tonight.
Well, I started to prepare my questions for tonight across the hall, and I'm thinking, okay, that's enough, Paul. I don't need that many questions because once I turn on the mic, he talks. I just listen.
Looking forward to it, as always, my friend. Thanks for making time for the daytime show, and we will see you at the rink later today.
Sounds good. Take care. Have a great day.
You as well. Paul Fixter, the other coaches show that we do after the coaches show every Friday morning, getting you ready for Kitchener Rangers hockey this weekend. And I'm just thinking on what Fixie said about Malcolm Spence and Matthew Schaefer with the Erie Otters, Cameron Reed, along with Luca Romano and Tanner Lamb for the Kitchener Rangers. There are an abundance of talented young prospects on the ice in this game tonight. Did Paul Fixter just sell a few more tickets to that game? You could do a lot worse for your evening's entertainment than being at the Memorial Auditorium for this hockey game. But don't worry, if you can't be there, we've got you covered right here. Once again, Paul and I will be on the air with the Harris Law pregame show from the Memorial Auditorium starting at 6:30 right here on 570 News Radio. Quick break, back with more of the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. You know what this song needs is more cowbell. My buddy Phil from Stratford wanted to hear some Blue Oyster Cult on your All Request Friday here on the program. You ask, we play. That's the way All Request Friday works. Fridays are also the time for our Friday 4 Roundtable, a roundtable discussion of the week's big stories. How about those reduced immigration targets in Canada? And what about the idea of mandatory treatment for people suffering from addiction or mental health issues? Those conversations coming up in the next hour here on the Mike Farwell Show. 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Well, you know, I started the show today with some Cyndi Lauper music and said, let's hear it for the girls, because today was the first time in Billboard chart history that three solo female acts held the top three spots on the chart. Oh, that's a bad feedback echo. That was totally my fault. I apologize for that. Why am I still hearing the feedback, though? Okay, we'll work on that from the technical standpoint here. I think it's going to really need some work. I think Rogers TV is going to have to end this live stream they're trying to do. That's what they might have to do. See, it's gone. I'm just making this up as I go along. It's all live. None of this is Memorex. Anyway, Cyndi Lauper, Tina Turner, Janet Jackson, top of the charts on this day in 1986. Top of our charts here on the show. With us for the Friday 4 Roundtable today, Janice Jim, who is the chair of Waterloo's Advisory Committee on Active Transportation. Janice, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And we've got Caitlin Kilgore with us as well, the co-owner of Dream Team Video Productions. Caitlin, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. It's good to see everybody.
It's great to see you as well. And Julie Caulflesh is with us. Julie is the Director of Fundraising and Communications for Sanguine Health Center. Julie, good morning to you also.
Good morning, Mike.
We have many an issue to discuss, so let's dive right into it. And Janice, I'll start with you on the first topic, which we learned about yesterday from our federal government. I think the information was deliberately leaked before the announcement was made official later in the day. But our federal government is going to, by the tens of thousands, reduce immigration over the next 3 years. What do you make of the decision?
I think it's sensible, but I don't like the tone that it's taking with them framing it around like a lack of housing, the housing units, because it's, it sounds like they're blaming immigration for all of our housing problems. And that's not a good path to take because it's going to lead to more, you know, discrimination against immigrants.
That may tie into the next issue we discuss here with our panelists this morning. But Caitlin, I'll swing it over to you on the idea that perhaps we need to dial back the number of immigrants we have allowed in.
I agree with Janice. The way that it was released early, the wording of it is very negative in terms of how people are looking and blaming our country's problems on immigration. These were problems rising way before any of this happened. They mentioned things like the housing market, but they also mentioned their increase in immigration was after the pandemic to help avoid a recession in our country, bring in the brightest and smartest and help fill the workers gap and all of that too. But you never really heard about that before I read this article. It was always just blame the government. And I think that there is time and reason to look at, based on what we have available in our country on growth. Like, I don't want us to turn into the US where we're stacked on top of each other. I love that we have open land and everything like that. But at the same time, we always hear that little statement that we were built on immigration here in Canada, which is somewhat true. Yet, you know, we had people living here on Turtle Island before immigration, but that's how pretty much 90% of people got here. And I think the biggest issue is there needs to be more education on the difference between immigration and refugee status, because I think a lot of people get confused with both and think that just everyone who wants to come to Canada, despite status, is just getting massive handouts, which is not true.
We have had historically an immigration system that is the envy of nations around the world. So I think there is something to that for sure, Caitlin, the idea that it's just sort of a floodgate that was opened and here we are today. That said, the feds have acknowledged that they need to kind of right size our numbers and hence the changes in the years ahead. Julie, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I agree with the decision and what my counterparts have said as well. I also think we need to look at how these systems are set up, where the feds kind of make these decisions, but then the burden gets downloaded to the province and municipalities. And there isn't proper infrastructure to support folks who are coming into our country to come in a way that will be successful for them and for us. So I think that it's been incredibly unfair, and it's created really unfair tension and, as we'll be talking about later, some other more aggressive, violent issues that I think could be prevented with better, more holistic approach and more acknowledgement of how this is impacting communities. And really, it's about creating that infrastructure so that people can come here, feel welcome, feel successful, have access to supports that are needed, because this is a very important part of our country. Having immigrants come to our country, it helps our economy. It helps us to fill labor market gaps. It's, you know, something that is an important part of our foundation. It got a little maybe out of our hands after the pandemic, and for good reasons. But I think it's good to take a pause and have a look at this so that we can do it right when we're welcoming people to the country.
When you talk about that better, more holistic approach, what are we thinking of then?
Well, I think that there, so I will tell you from my experience with the Sanguine van right now. So with Sanguine's outreach, we're seeing a lot of new Canadians coming out to the van to access our food and other resources like never before. And so we are aware that a number of them are college students who have, you know, come into this country with dreams of getting an education, of, you know, potentially becoming part of our country. And, you know, they haven't been given the social supports. A lot of them didn't have an understanding of the affordability and what it's like here in Canada and how expensive it can be. There isn't proper housing infrastructure for these students in particular. And so you need to have, it isn't just about taking a group of people and plunking them into a region. It's about having growth in all of those supports for everyone.
Janice, Caitlin mentioned earlier the stimulation for the economy and the opportunity to fill jobs through immigration, which I think we all agree was critically important, probably still is fairly important. Do you worry about those jobs going unfilled as we begin to reduce the numbers over the next several years?
Definitely. At the low end scale of the economy, there's always jobs that go unfilled. And those have fallen to the foreign worker program, especially the agricultural sector. And, that's going to be an issue we have to deal with. Companies are going to have to start paying more for people's labor because at the scale they're paying, Canadians aren't willing to take the jobs. And that's what the temporary foreign worker program was there for. But if they're cutting those targets, those companies are going to be in a labor shortage.
I think we are seeing some of the unintended consequences of being ill-prepared for the numbers we brought in. And now it will be interesting to see the impacts of this decision to start curtailing those numbers in the next few years. Janice, Jim, Caitlin Kilgore, and Julie Kallflescher with us on the Friday 4 Roundtable this morning. We'll take a break when we come back. We've already alluded to the conversation, and we talked about it on the show right out of the gates this morning at 9:15. Hate crimes, racism, overt racism on the streets of Waterloo Region. What do we do to combat it? We'll talk about that with our Friday 4 Roundtable as we continue on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio, and Rogers TV. With us around the virtual table this morning, Caitlin Kilgore, Julie Kallflesch, Janice Jim. Let's talk about hate crimes and those overtly on the streets of Waterloo Region. I mentioned earlier, we talked about it right out of the gates on the show this morning. In fact, we were the first show to bring you the audio of the awful interaction last week. And the young man who was on the receiving end of the racist tirade that said, among other things, go back to India. There are too many Indians in Canada. Spoke at regional council this week, imploring our regional government to do more to combat hate crimes. Caitlin, I'll start with you on this. Is this the sort of initiative that cities need to undertake today? More effort to combat hate crime?
Oh, 100%. And what's the wrong word to use here is funny. But when I saw that stat that Kitchener is number one in 2020, when a lot of people think the Black Lives Matter movement started, it didn't. It just got a lot louder. My business partner and I, for our Dream Team video production company, we set out to start talking to marginalized people within our communities and ask them, you've lived here your whole life. Maybe you've moved here. What are your experiences like? And when we did the research then, Kitchener was not number one, but we were top five. I want to say we were around three or four. So to say within 4 years that we were able to jump up that much further with the population that we have compared to other larger cities in Canada, that is a disgusting statistic to have. Absolutely horrific. And I think it stems on all different sides of things, of whether it's local law enforcement finally taking action and stepping up, whether it is our councillors and local governments saying, hey, this is an issue, like, look at what we are. And I think the other thing that needs to come to light is these aren't new issues either. These are things that have been brushed under the rug, shoved away, put down in a quiet place, like a lot of other issues. And it's just finally, in the day that we have social media, we're actually able to see things more in real time and get more of the truth behind it. So unfortunately, I don't think it is a new issue, but work needs to be done, like yesterday.
I'm trying to be optimistic insofar as the number of hate crimes reported points to a comfort level with doing the reporting. That said, we still don't want numbers like this. And I am curious, based on how vile this video was and the person screaming the vile language is clearly visible. I wonder if there will be anything further to come from that in particular. But Julie, I'll bring it over to you next. As a municipality, do communities need to do more to combat hate crimes?
Yes, I think until there are no more hate crimes, there's always something that we could be doing. I was concerned to hear, a communication strategy being batted around as a possible solution, as someone who works in communications and has been asked many times in my career to solve a complex problem with a communication strategy. That's just not going to cut it. And I believe that I've even been a part of, you know, we're all in this together and other strategies at the region that tend to backfire. What I would really like to see and what I think should happen is that we should see leadership in the municipal workplace embracing true equity and inclusion and changing systems, changing policies to model for the rest of the community. You have thousands of people in this community who work for municipalities. Why not start there with shifting the perspective? And I don't mean a, you know, half day webinar. I mean changing approaches, certainly modeling the behavior. I was so pleased to see Mayor McCabe speak out and do a video about the incident. I think that things like that go a long way. But certainly this is bigger than some posters and, you know, things that I appreciate the sentiment, but it's really got to become ingrained in how we do things. And without leadership to change systems, to change policies, we're just going to continue to be in this loop.
I think that's a point really well taken. It's gone well beyond the proverbial thoughts and prayers, if you will, right? We can condemn it publicly and make a post on social media, but systemic change is what's required here. And I like your thinking there, Julie, with the thousands of people that live in this community that work for various municipalities. Janice, I'll swing it over to you. Thoughts on what we witnessed and what we can do about it as a community.
Yeah, I totally agree with what was said that, you know, we need systems change and not just a PR campaign. You know, like kindness, those are just tag words. Like they're not actions. But, you know, having awareness as a community that this is an issue is a good start. Having people speak up about it is a good start. And having, I think, bystander training for the community. You know, when you see something, say something, letting people know that it's not okay to have any kind of casual everyday racism. You know, one thing that Ashwin mentioned was on public transit. And yeah, I've definitely witnessed incidents on public transit. And, you know, we can't tolerate it anywhere. So we have to educate everyone as a community to help each other and to defend each other sometimes, you know. I like that, you know, like Mayor McCabe and Councillor James, Rob Deutschman, they all made statements coming against it. That's great. And I want to see, you know, numbers and work. And I want to see stats of how our municipalities and cities are like diversifying their workforce. I want to see numbers from the police. Are they solving these cases? What actions are they taking? You know, I like that the cities and the region have a diversity, equity, inclusion plans and departments, but I want to see, you know, numbers and let us know, like, what's going on. Let us know what actual results are being done.
We talk an awful lot about data in decision-making, and this certainly would be important data to demonstrate progress on these issues. And I can't help but wonder at a higher level. Caitlin, go ahead. Oh, I thought I cut you out of the corner of my eye.
There was a fly. Farwell, I'm so up.
Okay,
sorry.
No, not
there
at all.
Was a fly.
Listen, you tell me to shut up anytime you want or wave your hand frantically to get my attention. I will close my yap immediately. But at a higher level, I've been wondering about, too, the rhetoric that's gone on both in the United States and here in Canada around immigration generally, how much that trickles down into the minds of somebody walking in the streets of Waterloo, for example. Good conversation with our Friday 4 Roundtable this morning. Caitlin Kilgore, Julie Caulflesh, Janice Chim here with us on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Well, if you thought talking about immigration levels and hate crimes right here in our own community were issues that would get people thinking and talking, how about the idea of mandatory, forced, or the softest word we use, involuntary treatment for people suffering from addictions and mental health issues. We'll get into that with our Friday 4 roundtable immediately following this update from the 570 News Center. Stay with us on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. I confess that week to week, I'm not sure which team of Friday 4 roundtablers is being assembled. I duck and hide and do other things and let our producer, Andrea, manage the bookings. But I can't think of a better trio to have in place today to talk about the next issue in particular. We love the perspectives that all of our teams here, if you will, on the Friday 4 Roundtable bring. But I think we've got some expertise in the area on this next conversation around mandatory or forced or involuntary treatment, which is something that came up at the Ontario Big City Mayor's Caucus meeting last week. Our Friday 4 Roundtable this morning is comprised of Julie Caulflesh, who's the Director of Fundraising and Communications for Sanguine Health Center, Janice Jim, the Chair of the Waterloo Advisory Committee on Active Transportation, and Caitlin Kilgore, who's the co-owner of Dream Team Video Productions. Julie, I'll start with you on this one. When the big city mayors met last week, and to be frank, Cambridge Mayor Jan Leggett, one of the driving forces behind a motion seeking legislative change here in the province so that municipalities have more power and the province creates more space and the ability, perhaps even through the use of the notwithstanding clause, to override the charter to move people against their will into treatment for mental health or addiction. What do you think of the idea?
Well, Mike, I think that we need to ask ourselves when we got to a place where we think that mayors should have a say over healthcare in the first place. That is not something that mayors should be trying to influence. And I think that it can create a really slippery slope in terms of where's the line of who gets forced into treatment? How is that being defined? And it sounds to me more like this is about encampments, and it certainly comes through pretty clearly in the articles that, you know, this is about clearing encampments. So now there's been injunctions against municipalities trying to clear encampments and force people out. So they're looking for a new way to do that. And that's exactly what this is. This has nothing to do with helping people. As a matter of fact, if people, it's a very small amount of folks, for anyone who has visited an encampment or, you know, been around folks who are experiencing homelessness, it's a very low number of folks who are at risk of being violent. And often that is because of a system failure, that there hasn't been enough mental health support, substance use support to help that person before they've gotten to that crisis point. So, you know, in terms of forced treatment, that is, there's evidence to show that that doesn't work. You know, there's certainly more that can be done around voluntary treatment to create less barriers, provide more options. There's a lot of folks waiting. They want to go into treatment and they're waiting, and we don't have the infrastructure to support that. And now we're going to force folks out of encampments into what I'm assuming are healthcare settings that are already overburdened. This is a horrible way to go in terms of policy. And it really, you know, comes down to a need to look at housing policies, you know, housing first, proper wraparound services, providing enough support for folks that they can get well and be able to survive without suffering the way that they are. The fact that there are people living in these communities in encampments is a failure of the leaders. And so I understand that sometimes municipalities' hands are tied because province makes decisions, the feds make decisions, and then, you know, we have to kind of bear the burden. But the truth is, that there's other more effective things that they could be doing in terms of advocating for more resources before we get to a point where they're deciding who goes into treatment and forcing people into treatment. This is a dangerous place that we should not want to go.
Two things. And first of all, thank you for foreshadowing Housing First as a conversation, which we're having on the show Monday. So I will shamelessly self-promote. Yes. But a retired professor from Wilfrid Laurier University, heading to a national conference on homelessness next week in Ottawa, will join our show and we'll do a deeper dive into Housing First and how he thinks it can work right here, given the money we're spending on other initiatives. So that'll be on the show Monday morning at 9:30. And Julie, I think your point is so well taken. And Mayor Dorothy McCabe from Waterloo made a similar point on the show yesterday when it comes to what about the people who want to access treatment now and can't? You mentioned those waiting lists. What if we took care of them before we started trying to force more people into the treatment that's already inaccessible for those who want it? I think it's an important point to bring to the conversation. Janice, what's your take on the idea of involuntary treatment?
I think it's kind of shocking that this was even circulated at the big city mayor's conference, that they had to discuss it for so long. I agree with all the points that are made, that people need treatment, but, you know, forced treatment doesn't work. And, you know, discussing using the notwithstanding clause to force people, there's no way that's going to hold up in court, especially when it goes to the Supreme Court. So I think it's just a really ridiculous motion. I understand that, you know, municipalities are facing like crisis levels with encampments and they want a solution, but this is not the way to go. And then now with the Ford government shutting down CTS sites, it's going to be even more of a problem. And then they promised 350 beds for all of Ontario. Like, those are the numbers that we're looking at. It's simply not enough. Like Mayor McCabe said, people want treatment and they can't even get it right now. I think it's just ridiculous that they even entertained this motion.
You're right about the length of time they spent on it at that caucus meeting last week. So much time, in fact, they deferred other items that were on that agenda. And the mayor of Oshawa was pretty frank. He says the federal and provincial governments are going to have to get used to the idea of uncomfortable conversations and or decisions, certainly indicating that he's leaning towards the idea of involuntary treatment and giving municipalities more power in that regard. Caitlin, your thoughts?
We don't have enough time for my thoughts.
No, we always have enough time for you.
But I really do appreciate, and like how you said, like, we are a great panel to discuss this, because my thoughts and reactions were personal to my experience. But Julie and Janice also touched on things that I never thought about prior. And, you know, it's kind of like cities covering up their own mistakes. Let's clear the encampments. Let's make it look like we're doing something. Addiction and mental health, addiction is mental health. There's no two ways around it. You cannot force somebody to get treatment, whether it's like forcing people, physically taking them, or saying, you know, you're at an intervention, they're like, hey, we're going to pay for you to go to treatment, we're going to get you help. If they don't want it, it will not work. So how much money are we going to waste? Where are these programs and facilities that we're going to be sending all these people to? Who's paying for it? What happens when they come out? Where are you going to send them? Back to the streets? Do you have support housing? Do you have group homes for them? Like, it is an absolute nightmare. There are people who are trying to get help right now, and there are incredible waiting lists. You pay out of pocket otherwise for privatized, and oh my, does that have dollar signs to it? And it is just an absolute nightmare, even when you go down the free route, trying to go online, even to find supports and different things. And then I think the most important piece of the puzzle to be looking at is, are we really going to allow local governments to start moving people and taking them wherever they want? Because then, you know, you have the, well, what's next if they do that? And the greatest point of, where do we draw the line? Where's that borderline? Where's that little invisible line that we say, okay, well, you go, but not you, not yet. It's just a horrible, horrible thing. And clearly absolutely nobody opened a book. Nobody did a single Google search. Nobody talked to anyone that has any sort of brain on this. You cannot force people into treatment centers and think it's going to be good.
Sorry, did I just hear correctly your mayoral campaign for the next municipal election, Caitlin Kilgore? Is that what I heard there? She's opening the books and then running for mayor. Okay.
Don't keep leaking my secrets, Mike.
Caitlin Kilgore, Julie Caulflesh, and Janice Jim are with us on the Friday 4 Roundtable this morning. We'll take a break, come back with something a little bit on the lighter side. Darn those pranksters ahead of Devil's Night here in the region. Stay with us on the Mike Farwell Show. 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. And with us around the virtual roundtable this morning, we have Janice Jim, Caitlin Kilgore, and Julie Caulflesh. A wee bit of background, if you'll indulge me here. My buddy, my best buddy, and this is what best buddies are for, taught me a pretty good lesson the other night. When I was out walking the dog, I stopped by, we're chatting on the front porch, and next door to him was a pretty extravagant Halloween display. And I commented on it. I thought, wow, look at your neighbor going all out for Halloween. I love it. And he said, yeah, it was a lot better until just a few nights ago when a handmade cardboard sign was posted from the neighbor saying, due to repeated thefts, I'm going to be scaling back this display and I won't be replacing what has been stolen on a number of occasions. And I said, oh, you know what? People really suck. And my buddy said to me, well, no, most people are actually quite good. It's just that the people who suck tend to suck an awful lot. So it was with that in mind that I brought forward for our roundtable this morning the issues of Halloween decorations being stolen because a couple more have popped up around Kitchener. And then we have a playground equipment fire that was allegedly deliberately set. An 18-year-old has now been arrested and charged in that case. Janice, I'll start with you on this. How do you react? Like my initial reaction was people suck. My buddy's right. No, not all people. But how do you react when you hear stories like that? Playground equipment set on fire, Halloween decorations being stolen. What's your reaction?
Definitely disappointment in the community. That, you know, you're destroying your own community, and these are like fun things that, you know, add value and people enjoy. Like Halloween decorations are always fun, especially those giant skeletons. Those are crazy. And then it's just sad that a school playground gets, destroyed because like kids love, you know, I've seen how much not just school kids, the whole community enjoys the playgrounds, and it always takes them months to replace because it's not the first time this has happened. So it's just, you know, I wish people would think more before they act, or like parents would kind of keep a better watch on their younger teenagers. I don't want to, you know, blame teenagers, but it's a little bit of a lack of civic pride that, you know, you're destroying your own community.
I love your point on the school playground, because the $65,000 cost estimate for damage is the proverbial drop in the bucket compared to the amount of time that neighborhood is going to be without the equipment that people enjoy so much. Caitlin, what are your thoughts when you hear stories like this?
I totally forgot Devil's Night was a thing. You're like thinking back when I was little, it was like a pumpkin was smashed in the middle of the street. Maybe somebody had a toilet paper roll thrown through a tree. You know, stuff that we called harmless. But obviously it grows. And I think it does have a lot to do with maybe keeping an eye on your kids. What are they doing? But at the same time, I don't think it's just like it's a Halloween thing. So now we're going to see this. What is there for kids to do that doesn't cost an arm and a leg? When I was a kid, my mom dropped me off at the movies. $20 got me into the theater, popcorn, candy, drink, and then money to play in the arcade after when you waited for your parents. And I think that's the other thing. There's a lot of really awesome big things in town. You have to drive there. You need transportation to get there. It costs money. Playgrounds everywhere are packed because it's free. It's in your community. And I think that's the other thing. We need more local activities, parks, nature areas within these smaller communities, we need to start thinking like a large community, like a large city like Toronto, where we're smaller communities within, and give people more to do. Because unfortunately, vandalism's always going to happen at different scales. But I think the one thing is it's boredom at the end of the day. You're bored, so let's go do something, ha, ha, ha. And sometimes it escalates, and sometimes it turns into arson. But I think it's just, how do we get it to the point where people aren't just going around with their friends and being like, let's do something silly that to them is silly, and then escalates. I think we need to focus more on what can we provide and offer our youth.
I confess that thought also crossed my mind. Are we providing enough opportunities to get this energy out in a more productive manner, right? If I could be so brash as to compare it to raising a pet, they say a tired dog is a well-behaved dog. So entertain that dog and the dog will chill out later on if you give it that stimulation. And of course, idle hands do the devil's work, don't they, Julie Caulflesh?
They sure do. So, you know, I have the privilege of being able to put my kids in all kinds of activities. And I do think that, to Caitlin's point, that's very expensive. And I know I'm questioning it sometimes when it's the beginning of the hockey season. But, you know, we're lucky that we're able to do that. And not everyone has access to that, even with different, you know, support services that are out there to try to bridge the gaps. These are two incidents. It does happen a lot. You know, when I've worked in municipalities, there's often vandalism in bathrooms and other things. And it's, you know, it can often be teens. So I think that you're onto something there with, do we need to provide more for folks to do? But I also like Janice's point on civic pride. I think that, you know, giving teens a better understanding of that bigger picture. When my kids have those lessons in school about voting and what, you know, what that means, and they actually have to learn about each candidate and understand what they stand for and where that kind of aligns with them or doesn't. And I think there's lots of opportunity there to kind of help people understand, when you do this damage, it's, this is how it impacts, you know, the taxpayers, the, like, as a parent of young kids, like, years ago, losing our playground would have been a real challenge. Like, it's a lifeline between 6 and 8 when it's bedtime. And so, you know, I think it's just asking the question, maybe, why? Like, why are people doing this? What is it that we can do to make people not feel like that's a good idea? And I don't know if we'll ever find a solution for it, because, like was said, you know, people have vandalized and always will. But yeah, it's a bummer. I'm sad for the folks that own the skeleton. I really like, I've looked at them myself. I just don't know where you store those things. So.
I certainly enjoy the effort that's put into those displays, just like I do at Christmas time. And yeah, it definitely becomes a bummer. I like where you're going with this idea of civic pride and instilling that in folks from the earliest ages so that we all share that sense of pride and that sense of community. As always, a great discussion, never really enough time for it, even with an hour. Julie Caulflesh, the Director of Fundraising and Communications for San Gwynne Health Center, Janice Jim, the Chair at the Waterloo Advisory Committee on Active Transportation, and Caitlin Kilgore, co-owner at Dream Team Video Productions. Thank you all very much for joining us on the show this morning, and enjoy the weekend ahead. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. And our thanks once again to Caitlin Kilgore, Julie Caulflesh, and Janice Jim for joining us on the roundtable this morning. Always enjoy those opportunities to hear different perspectives on the week's big stories. Maybe you have a perspective of your own to add to those big stories or anything else that might be on your mind this Friday as we roll into the afternoon time. Opening up the phone lines in the next hour for your 12 o'clock talkback hour. And this being Friday, it is your Free Phones Friday edition of the Talk Back Hour. So you make the call. We will listen to the conversation you want to have. Also marks the end of our time with our friends at Rogers TV Cable 20. Thanks to the entire team there for producing the TV side of this show from 10 until noon every day. You can see us and hear us at the same time. Off to the 570 News Center for an update, and then Free Phones Friday begins on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio, and so long, Rogers TV.
Take out the papers and the trash, or you don't get no spending cash. If you don't scrub that kitchen floor, you ain't gonna rock and roll no more.
Don't talk back.
Just finish cleaning up your room. Let's see that dust fly with that broom. Get all that garbage out of sight, or you don't go out Friday night. Daggity-yack.
Don't talk back.
Allow me ever so briefly to begin our Talk Back Hour, Free Phones Friday edition today, with a huge note of thanks to the guy on the other side of the glass, Colin Wobbles Robertson. Every time he's on that side of the glass, he brings coffee with him to work. And today he brought a larger than usual coffee, as if he knew I was out making very merry with the folks at Habitat for Humanity Waterloo Region last night at the big house party. Thank you, sir. The additional coffee was not only kind of you, but necessary today.
I had a feeling it would be after you talking with pretty much everybody about how this event was going to go and it was going to be a big party until the early morning hours, which it sounds like.
I think Something's Always Flying is still playing, actually, at Schooner Street Brewery where we were last night. Great night. Lots of money raised for a great cause and plenty of people to see and talk to. And we had a good old party to raise money for Habitat for Humanity.
Well, that's great. I'm glad I could keep you fueled up for today.
Exactly. And now
you're going to need it.
I'm going to need it. And so you can get me through this next hour. You make the call. Let's have a conversation. And then I'll go home and grab another coffee and get to the rink tonight for the Rangers and the Otters. Okay. 519-570-2545. Star 570 and 1-800-570-5715. Jersey Bill, start us off, my friend.
Well, good luck to the Rangers in these two games against the Erie Otters. But I find it sort of interesting that you're going to be traveling into Erie. You know, don't trip over any lawn signs. don't let the. I don't know whether you're going to turn the radio on and hear constant political advertising, but of course, it's just been working out the past two presidential elections and this one as well. As the city of Erie and Erie County go, so goes Pennsylvania. And as Pennsylvania goes, so goes the nation. So I'm sure you're going to see you'll be around a lot of political activity, whether or not you're going to be aware of it or not. That's really one of those epicenters of this election cycle.
Billy, appreciate the call and hearing from you. And believe you me, I will be as plugged in as I can be while making my way to Erie on Saturday, because I am very interested in what's going on in the United States. As I just said to somebody last night at the big house party when we were having a conversation, in what world could you ever have imagined that someone like Donald J. Trump would even be in the running for re-election? I mean, how he got elected the first time is an interesting story in and of itself. But having endured those 4 years, how on earth could it be happening again? But this is the state of politics today. So yes, I know how important Pennsylvania is to the overall result, and I will be paying very close attention on my way to Erie. Andre, you're on Free Phones Friday.
Mike, almost put me to sleep there.
What? Why? How?
just talking about the United States, right? It's just so many stories and all that stuff. And oh, my goodness gracious, the stuff that's coming out of there. But let's get back local, Mike. Two things about
I think my feelings are still hurt, Andre. I can't even get over it right now. I almost put you to sleep.
Well, yeah, just United States, it's just they create their own mess. Right. And they need.
You don't think the outcome of that election is going to have any impact on Canada?
I don't want to see it.
You don't want to see the impact? Well, you're going to get the impact. But wait a minute. Isn't the whole theater of Kamala Harris versus Donald Trump, that's not interesting to you at all?
Okay. My wish years ago, I said it on your show, I wish for a woman to be power in the world because of none of this nonsense. I said it before. But again, Mike, I'm going to go back to local because...
Okay. Well, what about Angela Merkel in Germany or Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand? They were in power in the world.
Yeah, all women.
Yeah. So that was your wish. Your wish already came true.
No, not yet.
United States is a big one. Oh,
China
you want... Okay,
one,
so you, I got you. All right, Andre, bring it back to local for me. I'll try to stay awake as I listen to you.
No, put your feet up, Mike. Look at you, eh? Game night. So, two things. One is about the park, the vandalists, and it's very shame because, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, there was one happened here on Queen and West Heights, little kiddie park, and that went down, and they burned it, and it's a shame because it hasn't been back. And again, who gets the loss of that? It's the kids, it's the community, and it's very sad. People are very hurt for whoever they did it, you know. Second thing is I want to mention, I've been listening about the overpass on roundabouts. Yes, but I don't really agree because I haven't heard, Mike, what about strollers? What about wheelchairs? What about scooters, right? How they're going to get up there and down? That was a question to you, Mike. And go ahead.
Huh? What? Sorry, did you say something?
I fall asleep.
That's why they put ramps on them, their bridges there, Andre. And I know it to be true because they've got it on the bridge that connects you from Victoria Street. Well, River Road, across Victoria, TA Appliances there. Then you go over that bridge and you're on Bingham and Center Drive and Shirley Drive. That bridge also has ramps primarily for people on bicycles and whatnot, but there you go. You don't have to worry about steps. You can use it as a ramp. I'm not saying the bridge is the ultimate solution. I thought it was an interesting idea, though, that was brought forward during our conversation this morning about the new roundabout outside St. Benny's in Cambridge. All right, we'll take a break. Dallas, hang in there. I want to talk to you because it's a new name on my phone lines. We'll get right to that. And your calls, too, on Free Phones Friday, the 12 o'clock talkback hour here on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio.
Three:30 in the morning, not a soul in sight. The city's looking like a ghost town on a moonless summer night.
Awesome, Garth Brooks.
Raindrops on the windshield.
By request for Ron on this All Request Friday here on the program. When the thunder rolls. It is gray out there today. I don't think we're getting any thunder here, but it is your All Request Friday here on the program. Thanks to Jesse for the email to Mike at 570news.com. Trump is going to beat Kamala by a landslide. When Trump was in power, there was no new wars and the U.S. economy was booming. Whoever thinks Kamala is a good choice should get out of La La Land, as she never got one vote for the nomination the first time and can't speak a coherent sentence. Trump 2024. Jesse, thanks for the email to Mike at 570news.com. Let's get back to the phones on this talk back hour. Dallas, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Not so bad.
Good.
I have to chuckle at that email. I don't know who it is that could actually speak a coherent sentence on the other side of the border. But anyways, we'll leave that one alone.
I don't disagree, though. Well said, sir. Well said.
Anyways, I just wanted to make a couple of comments on both your and my nemesis, the wonderful roundabout.
Oh, talk away, my friend. Talk. I'm all ears.
As far as the one at Saginaw and Franklin, yes, I would think that maybe the pedestrian bridge would be the better option. Honestly, as soon as I heard they were going to put one in and they said they were going to go with the tunnel, and everybody was like, oh, well, we're going to have to dig the road up and tear the thing out, the corner's going to be closed for X number of years. I'm like, well, why don't they just put something over top? You know, it makes simple.
I think you're absolutely right. Makes a lot of sense to me.
Right. The other comment I want to make about the roundabouts, as far as pedestrians go and such, I live on Linwood Ave in Cambridge, and I work on Savage Drive. So I got to cross Franklin and Savage every day, twice a day, because I walk to work and back. I don't drive anymore. You know, there's a certain amount of vigilance as far as the pedestrian goes, and I'm saying this as a pedestrian, on how they cross. Because quite often every morning, the Franklin bus will pull up at the stop in front of Mayor Murphy, and I see four or five people file off, and they walk down that little sidewalk, and they're all staring at their phone. They're not looking at anything, and they just make the turn and start across the road. No concern for what may or may not be coming at them. When I come up to a roundabout, I stand there and I wait until I know that both vehicles are stopping and or stopped, and then I cross. And I've never had an issue. And that's about all I got to say.
All right, Dallas, I appreciate what you said, my man. Thank you for the call. I couldn't agree more. There's vigilance required on all of our parts, of course, when we're on the roads. We're not the only ones on those roads. You realize that. So drivers, when you are approaching a roundabout, as you are slowing down, I says for emphasis, anyway, make sure you're also checking for pedestrians who will be, as Dallas points out, checking for you as well. Let's all be vigilant out there. Karen, you're on Free Phones Friday. Good afternoon.
Hi, thank you very much. This is the first time I'm calling in, actually. I have to be honest, first time I've listened to your show. But I'm going to be a regular from now on, I'm sure. Anyway, my comment is about the drug addiction issue. It's about... It's a dramatic position, but I think we need to create a serious task force to get these drugs off our streets to begin with. Not enough focus, not enough energy is put there. We have addictions are on the rise. They're not declining. And we're finding that the victims are getting younger and younger. So, you know, what we're doing is things like Safe Supply out in BC, these safe injection sites. We're just making it easier to create addicts. So we need to take a more proactive approach. And we've got, we need our law enforcement, we need our government to really slam down hard on this. And you can't be addicted to something that you don't have access to. So I think that that's where we really need to put a lot more energy.
All right, Karen, I appreciate the call. Thanks for being a first-time caller to our show. I'm glad you found us. I'm glad you're thinking you're going to stick around and be a regular listener to the show. I don't think that Safe Supply or consumption and treatment services sites creates addicts. I think people are already addicted when they arrive there. And I also think that whether you're controlling the substance more or not, where there's a will, there's a way, and people will find a way to get a hand on it. However, having said that, I do not disagree that we could do more on the supply side of things and figure out ways, that task force might be one of those ways, to get to the elimination of these drugs on our streets. And this also came up in conversation last night. I think that we need to hold Big Pharma accountable for the addictive nature of these drugs that were prescribed to us. I'll leave that right there for now. We'll take a break. Come back with more of your 12 o'clock talkback hour. This is Free Phones Friday on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio.
Drink.
but it's a coffee. That is the outlaw, Eric Church. Part of your All Request Friday here on the program. Clinton wanted to hear some Eric Church because good boys go to church, don't they, Clinton? Attaboy. All Request Friday every Friday here on the show. It's also Free Phones Friday on your 12 o'clock talkback hour. Right back to the phones we go. Francis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mike. I want to congratulate you. You're now my number one station to go to for to listen to.
I love it, Francis. Thank you so very much for that.
Now, the number one, before you go on the air, it was Buzz Reynolds. He retired this morning at 10 a.m. And did he ever have a great talk about his 45 years being a radio host? And the last 10 years, like I say, I listened to him faithfully before you were able to come on.
Where were you still listening to Buzz Reynolds these days, Francis? I love Buzz.
You know, God's Country.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. And I used to sing us boys up there. I was waiting for you to play the Beatles song, We All Live in a Yellow Submarine. Well, I had a 62 Mercury, and we all sang, We All Lived in a Yellow Mercury.
I love it. I love it.
Well, I guess that's about the best. I just want to let the people know we're sure going to miss Buzz, because he was down to earth. I'll call him a good old farmer.
You know what? Buzz is a great guy, and even though he's retired from God's Country up there in Wingham, he's not going to be far from keeping his fingers in the community for sure.
Well, I'm sure of that. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Francis. I really appreciate it. If I hang around long enough, I'll be the number one radio announcer in the entire world, because everybody else will retire, you see? And as has been pointed out before, I am fueled not just by caffeine, but by anger. It keeps me young. It keeps me vibrant. It keeps me kicking and screaming. Buzz, it's been a great ride. 45 years for you. I'm not yet at 45, but Francis says now that Buzz has retired, we are his number one station. I love to hear it. We had Karen call before, a first-time caller. Dallas called before, a first-time caller. Are we on to something with this radio show? Is there something in the air? Is there something in the water? We love it. We love having you here. We love opening the phone lines so we can hear from you every day between noon and 1. You pick up the call, let us know what's on your mind, and start the conversation here on the 12 o'clock Talkback Hour, Free Phones Friday edition on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio.
Put a spell on you. Because you're mine. Stop the things you do. What's up?
I put a spell on you.
Yeah, I can't stand.
Screaming Jay Hawkins right there by request from another Hawkins, Nate. Nathan, Nate Dog. He wanted to hear some Halloween themed music, as this is the last Friday before Halloween next Thursday. And it's an All Request Friday. Nate thought we should have a whole show of Halloween-themed music. I thought, it's not a bad idea, but you know what? We'll save the Halloween stuff for next Thursday when it is Halloween. Nonetheless, if you want to hear a song, Halloween-themed or otherwise, let us know when you call in or send an email to mike@570news.com. We will play a little bit of your favorite song on our All Request Friday. This is your 12 o'clock talkback hour on Fridays. We call it Free Phones Friday, and right back to the phones we go for Elias. Good afternoon, Elias.
Good afternoon, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fine. This is my second time calling you for the last, what, 17 years?
Yeah. I remember the first time, Elias. It took you 17 damn years.
Yeah, you said, why you wait for so long? Then I said, okay, from now onward, I have to call him all the time, whenever I have time.
That's good. I'm glad you have time today.
Yeah, I have time today. So to begin with, usually in the morning I listen to your show, but in the evening or afternoon I am a sports fan. I watch sports like baseball, hockey, soccer, you name it.
I love it. That's a great way to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one thing I was observing when I was watching all these games, for example, like Vlade from Toronto Blue Jays, if you remember, he couldn't hit the 200 he was looking for.
Yeah, he got 199 hits this year.
199. He couldn't get the 200. There was a reason why he didn't get it.
Oh, yeah? Why is that?
I'm telling you. First, let's give you another example. Like, you know, Austin Matthews?
The greatest hockey. Yeah, the greatest hockey player in the world, Elias.
You call him M.A. or what?
A.M., yeah.
A.M. In the last year, he tried to get his 70th goal. He couldn't do it.
That's right.
He went up to, what, 69, I guess.
That's correct.
And he couldn't do it. There was a reason.
Elias, are you going to pick on my favorite teams now? Are you going to make fun of them? Is that what you're doing here?
That's my favorite team, too.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Really, both of them, they're favorite teams, like Blue Jays and the Maple Leafs, they are my favorite.
Good.
Toronto Raptors is the same thing.
Absolutely. They should be everybody's favorite. You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, one more thing, like when the game online, like basketball players, the best players, when the game is online, they miss free throws. The game is online, and they are the best players. And there is a reason why.
Okay. I'm very curious now. So why didn't Vladdy get 200 hits? Why didn't Austin Matthews get 70 goals? And why do players miss free throws?
Because there is a pressure on them. Too much pressure on them.
But Elias, pressure is privilege.
It's privilege. That's why, because if they play normal, they could make it. But the more they try, the more they miss to achieve that goal.
Okay. All right.
So I don't know how they're going to get rid of that monkey on their back.
Too much pressure. Too much pressure. The monkey's too big.
Too big. So that's what I was observing. I say if they play just normal, they may have done it.
I get it. They have to be looser. I get it.
Yeah, they have to get loose just like normal. But when there is pressure, the fan is waiting for them. So they couldn't make it. So that's all, Mike, today. Let's say today.
Okay, Elias, it's good to hear from you. Thank you.
I don't wait another 17 years to call you, so.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a call now and then.
Please do.
Okay, like...
Thank you, my friend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Have a nice day.
You too. 17 years, Elias waits to call me. And now he calls me and makes fun of my sports teams. But they're his favorite sports teams, too. So then it's okay to make fun of them. Too much pressure. You know what? Elias is onto something there. That's a lot of pressure in Toronto. Kyle, there's no pressure in Listowel. I know that.
No pressure. We live the most relaxed lifestyle, I think, in all of Ontario.
I love it.
I just want to say... Lisa the other day kind of broke my heart when she said, like, a horrible taste in music and she didn't want polka.
She's not wrong.
I'm not going to argue because we all have our different tastes in music.
Okay.
But what I will say is I was trying to get a polka song to dedicate to her today, but it's not working. So next week, I think I'm going to shock everybody, but I'm going to pull something out of my hat. It's going to be Canadian. I think everybody's going to enjoy it, and you're going to be shocked that I actually like this band or a couple of bands that I'm going to request for the next couple of weeks.
I'm very excited now. I've got something to look forward to.
You will. Thanks a lot, Mike. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Kyle. You too. All Request Fridays, and Kyle is promising to bring the CanCon over the next couple of weeks. See? Another reason to look forward to Fridays here on the show. Mark, good afternoon. You're on the Talkback Hour.
Good afternoon, Mike. I've got an opinion on the arson park fire.
Sure.
Okay. I think that young man, I know he's only 18, should be accountable for his actions, and he has to pay for it, the $65,000.
Wow, that's pretty bold, Mark. You know what I was thinking when our Friday 4 panel was talking about it? And, you know, we talked about civic pride and things like that. I wonder if maybe part of the sentence could be, if he's found guilty, to help rebuild that playground.
Well, yeah, not a bad idea, Mike.
Okay. I mean, listen, I didn't say your idea was bad. I just threw out another idea. That's how we do things around here. You have an idea, right. I have an idea.
But, you know, he's only 18. I don't know if he's working or not, but garnish his wages, till paid in full. He'll never do it again.
All right, Mark. I appreciate the call. 65 grand is going to take a long time just from having wages garnished. Surely the 18-year-old knows how to use a ratchet set. We'll get him out there and help him put together. He can help put together the new playground in Kitchener that got burned down. I think that'd be a not bad way to go about it. Reinforce to him the importance of this playground equipment. This is the Mike Farwell Show, your 12 o'clock talkback hour on a Friday. It's Free Phones Friday. 570 News Radio.
Standing by the road with a heavy load from the feet he stole, and if you see your sister falling by the way, just stop and say you're going the wrong way. You've got to try a little kindness, get show a little kindness, just shine your light for everyone.
Oh, the late, great Glenn Campbell. I got a lot of time for that guy because I remember his album in our console stereo system in the first family home I ever knew, back on Decay Street in Kitchener, Mount Hope, right up neighborhood. My mom loved Glenn Campbell, as do I by extension. That is Try a Little Kindness by request for Elizabeth here on your All Request Friday on the show. It's also Free Phones Friday, the hour we open up to hear from you. Your chance to start the conversation. Mayor Jake, your worship, good afternoon.
Mike, how are you now?
I'm good, and you?
Good. I can't believe they kicked me out of that meeting. And I'll tell you, I told the security guard, I said, I know Mike Farwell. And he said, Mike, who? And then I told him we need to step outside and have a Donnybrook right now.
I like the idea that Donnybrook... Tarps off, Mayor Jake?
Tarps came off. And unfortunately, bigger, stronger, faster, and unfortunately ended up on my head, but that's okay. We're back at it.
Let that be a lesson to you, Mary Jake. Name-dropping me will get you precisely nowhere in this town.
I can't believe you didn't know you. I'm like, what do you mean? It's we're talking about a legend, and still nothing. I couldn't believe it.
There's only one legend in this relationship, Shorzy. Settle down.
That's right. I'm the legend.
Exactly. Dial it back about 10% there.
Listen, I have a suggestion. You know how we have speed cameras and how they generate money, which I think is a great idea for having them in school areas. So I was driving into work and I noticed there's some pretty bad behavior on the road with people making pretty dangerous maneuvers and doing really stupid things on the road. I'm thinking, well, if we can use our webcams, and if we can get a clear license plate photo, and if a car's misbehaving or a driver's misbehaving, why can't we send that into the Waterloo Region Police and then they just start giving out tickets? It doesn't go against your license, but just like, hey, you misbehaved, here's a ticket. Because I feel like there's more of that than there is speeding and other stuff. Like I see it all the time.
I don't disagree. The only thing I worry about, Mayor Jake, when I hear about stuff like that, is kind of like the speed cameras. I think our speed cameras are way over the top. I don't think we need 175 of them. I don't think we need them patrolling us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year in school zones at 30 kilometers an hour and a few other things. So if we're going to, like, I know we have the technology, but could you imagine, like, every single aspect of our lives under surveillance? I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that.
I'm not saying, like, yeah, okay, like, I agree, like, not having the cameras on 24-7, but if we're driving and, say, somebody goes through a red light and you have it on camera instead of a red light camera getting it, I feel like that the city can generate more money. It would make people just behave better on the road, but that's just my opinion.
I got you. Mayor Jake, appreciate your opinion. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next time, like, watch for the sucker punches when they don't let you into those meetings and then you tell them you're going to take it outside. But I don't know. I'm starting. I was there on the speed camera thing. Like, if you don't want to get a ticket, just don't speed. But I think we're overdoing it a little bit. I think we're getting into cash grab territory here. Like, it's a new revenue generation. Anyway, I'll just leave it there. Good conversation with Mayor Jake. And next we go to Bob. Afternoon, Bob.
Good afternoon, sir. I hope you have a good weekend.
Well, thanks in advance for that. I plan to have a good weekend. I hope you have a good weekend, too.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Okay, I was finally seeing a conservative commercial that makes kind of explains what they're talking about.
Are you sure, Bob, you don't understand what the conservative commercials are talking about because you look at them through red liberal lenses?
No, I don't.
Okay.
And this commercial, it's from Alberta?
Yep.
And they're talking about the tax?
Yep. Which tax? The carbon tax or the general tax? Like, they don't have provincial sales tax out there, so what?
Cut the tax. So
maybe axe the tax. Carbon tax.
And the people in this ad are walking backwards, which is a perfect example of what the Conservative Party wants to do.
That's a good one. I like that.
They want to go backwards.
They want to go backwards.
And
what if they only want... Oh, yeah, okay, sorry, yeah.
Pierre talks about warning the country about the woke agenda. So
yes,
I hope
this
is hard to Uncle Donald. Have a good day, Mike.
You too, Robert. I appreciate the call. Maybe they just want to go backwards on the tax. I'm good with going backwards on some taxes. Eh? How about income tax? Remember when that was just for the war? It was funding the war effort. Is the war over yet? I'm just curious. Can anybody help me out with that one? It's your 12 o'clock talk back hour. Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed unto the sun till we found a sea of green, and we lived beneath the waves in our yellow submarine.
Now, did they say yellow submarine or yellow mercury? Because when Francis called earlier, he said that's what they would sing out there in God's country. Lives up there in the Formosa area. Go get yourself your hands on a good Formosa Springs beverage, if you know what I'm saying. All Request Friday here on the show, Francis wanted to hear yellow submarine, not to be confused with yellow mercury. Those, of course, would be the Beatles here on the show. Back to the phones. It is Free Phones Friday. Dylan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mike. I had to call in after, I think it's Mayor John's comment about the traffic cameras and more traffic cameras. I sure don't want to live in a society where I am being watched all the time and tickets are going to show up in the mail. I think it's absolutely ludicrous the amount of cameras that are in our region and that are coming. A school zone is a school zone a couple hours before and a couple hours after school is in session, not at 3 o'clock in the morning. These tickets that come in the mail don't do anything other than a fine. There's no demerit points attached to anything. So someone who's wealthy could have 50 of these tickets and it's going to make zero impact to their driving because they can afford to just pay the bill. Let's put some more patrol out on the roads. You're going to educate people. Repeat offenders' insurance rates are going to go up or totally cut off, and the roads are going to be safer. This is totally a cash grab. And what I'd like you to do, Mike, could you, like, name the councillors that voted this? I'm not big into local politics, and you know, that's my bad.
I'd like to vote them out.
I will gladly do that for you, Dylan, and I appreciate the call. I'm with you on that score. I really am. I think Dylan describes some of the perils of road surveillance, automated road surveillance, especially if, yeah, those tickets land in the mailbox of somebody who's wealthy enough just to pay the fine over and over and over again. Increased patrols, education, I think it matters a lot. I think you're going to be hearing something pretty interesting about speed cameras in the not-too-distant future. So stick around. I promise you, we will let you know about it here on the show. But I'm kind of with you on that one, Dylan. I think we've gone a little bit overboard here. As much as I want us to drive better, and I really do, like, we have to behave better out there on the roads. I'm not comfortable with a camera on every lamppost, for example. I just got to touch on this email from Michael. Just writing in to mention, he writes to Mike at 570news.com. One of the main reasons I listen to the show is because of all the quote-unquote characters that call in during the talkback hour. Always the same handful. It's hilarious. We've got our regulars. We love them. We have laughs here during the talk back hour. And that's all the time we have for laughs today. I hope you'll join us for Kitchener Rangers hockey tonight. Me and Paul Fixter will be on the air with your Harris Law pregame show at 6:30. Now you know, with Rob Snow is coming up right after this update from the 570 News Center. Colin Roberts and our guy on the other side of the glass. My name is Mike Farwell. I'll see you tonight at the hockey game. Bye for now.